Hello everyone and welcome back to the movie calendar. My name is Lee.
My name's Terrence.
And this week we're going to be talking all about Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. And as you can hear straight up, the sound is a lot better quality this week than it was last. I found the adapters for my microphone to work, so hallelujah, I don't have to go mad and murder my family.
Don't worry, there's no typewriter here that will be able to foreshadow that happening, so any manual typewriters in my house I've thrown out now.
Yep, get rid of them.
We've got the dump people that, you know, when there's the hard rubbish and people go around with their utes looking for treasures, they've already been around and picked them all up.
Yep. They take them out of every house in the world. I do love a good manual typewriter. My grandparents had one at their house. I used to love going to visit and just sort of clack away at the thing. I look at them completely different now because if you weren't here last week, it was announced that when we said that we were doing The Shining for the first episode in October, very exciting. This one is going up a little bit late as well. Do apologize for that. For those eagerly awaiting the movie calendar podcast each week, all three or four of you, thank you for that. Things happened as life does, but we are getting it out as quickly as we can. But no, as I said during Jurassic Park, I had not seen The Shining. It was one of the films on my shame list or sort of to-do list. I finally got around to watching it this week and cannot wait to talk about it. I have so many questions and lots of thoughts and a few theories as well. So we're going to dive into that very soon. But it's nice to see Terrence back in the black t-shirt. Looking back to normal.
I feel normal. I feel myself. I feel my my very filmic self. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Oh, yes, you do. You're a sounding board for my thoughts and ideas. No, of course not. We love...
So many theories going around on this film that I... Look, I did the wrong thing getting ready for this. I actually Googled The Shining. And I just swamped my head and I thought, I'm not reading anymore. I didn't read too many, to be honest. I just was flicking through the results and looking at all these just titles. And I thought, this is nuts. What are people doing? How can they... But this movie's been out since... This was made in 1980, right?
Correct.
So they've had a good amount of time to get this done. A couple of years ago, it was its 40th anniversary. So... There is a lot out there in the world about this. I haven't seen the sequel yet. The sequel?
I have. I watched it. I literally watched Dr. Sleep this morning. And I might touch on that a little bit because that probably won't end up on the movie calendar. Classic The Shining only. But no, I'll take a little bit of dive in that because it does explain a lot of things in this film that are kind of left unanswered, of which there is a lot of things. But...
I'm happy not hearing those because I haven't seen Doctor Sleep yet.
And sure, okay. Well, you know, no spoilers then for Doctor Sleep. I might just give my general thoughts on it as to whether it's something that maybe you should or shouldn't. So we'll get to that
in a little bit. Is Doctor Sleep the like the longest? I don't know. Would you call this a sequel? Is it the longest time since the original was made that the sequel is created?
Oh, that's a good question. With nothing in between,
Might be worth looking into.
Mad Max Fury Road was a long one, but nowhere near as long as that gap.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd certainly be up there. If anyone listening on the podcast app of choice, reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram or send us an email. Links to all of these are in the description below. We are at The Movie Cal everywhere. Otherwise, if you're here checking us out on YouTube... we have a YouTube channel. If you're just listening to us on audio format, we are The Movie Calendar. Comment below if you know of any long in-between sequels between the first film and the second, or even just between films. Would love to know.
Toy Story was huge. The Incredibles was huge. I think that was like 14 years.
Yeah,
was it 14, 12? I don't know, but
12 or 14.
Anyway, it was huge. Ewan McGregor, but yeah, I don't. I'm not keen on hearing outcomes that Dr. Sleep reveals, because I'm sure it does. So
I won't do that.
If you please, that would be awesome. I'm happy just talking about this film as the film that it is. The what's it called? Not reverence that it has. I guess the place in film that this film has carved out for itself, I guess.
Yeah. The it's cinematic history in this film, obviously directed by Stanley Kubrick. I'm not too familiar with his filmography. We'll definitely be checking out a bunch of his other work. I've seen a few things, but I have not watched every single one of his movies. I'm not really the horror guy. I've only kind of started dipping my toe into the world of it. You might think that, like, contrary to that, because of, like, oh, I'm talking about Get Out soon, which is happening at the end of this month, and I talk about a whole bunch of other horror films, but no, I've only just started doing that in the last couple of years. And if you are not a big horror person, I'd still recommend giving The Shining a go.
Yeah, watch this
one. It's a good introduction into horror, I think. There's a lot of sort of psychological things happening in there as well, and as well as supernatural, but we're going to get into all of that. Whilst there is going to be no spoilers for Dr. Sleep during this discussion, there is 100% going to be spoilers for The Shining. So if you haven't seen it, check it out, rent it or buy it, or if you've just got it at home, pop it on, give it another watch. It's the time of year, and we're going to get into it very soon. Terrence is looking away from the... Oh, here we go. He's got his copy there. I don't do physical media anymore. I've got a few select things, but I'm all digital.
I had to dig it up. I had to dig it up, and I found it. I thought, where is this thing? I think it was actually in here behind me for a very long time. I didn't even realize.
Are you sure it wasn't hidden behind a door that you had to axe your way through to get it?
No, but I do have... Funny you say that. No, there is no axe.
No axe. I seriously thought you were going to bring an axe out. That would have been terrifying.
There is no axe. No.
I can just imagine you doing that, and then one of your kids gets up and comes into the frame behind you and is like, Dad, what are you doing?
Oh, man. I only have one child. If you see two children behind me, please flag me down, Lee. They are not twins. They are not twins.
I'll keep an eye out.
This film has made twins creepy all of a sudden, right? I don't know. Well, all of a sudden. I don't know. I mean, those twins were scary.
They were always kind of creepy, right?
We know a few twins. I know a few twins. They're not creepy at all. The good
twins
ones
are great.
The good ones aren't. I like it. Creepy.
I always wanted to have a twin so that I could, I always thought I'd be able to become like a master heist person if I had a twin for some reason. Like, I'd just be able to pull off all these incredible heist jobs.
Yeah. Like, that person doesn't have a say in it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you stand here. Exactly. Pretend to be me. I'm not going to be pretending to be you. But look, I put my kids to bed not long ago, and my daughter asks, as she does every time, she goes, "What film are you doing?" And I told her The Shining, and she goes, "Oh, what's that about?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm not getting into this right now. It's your bedtime, plus it's a scary movie." And she says, my daughter said to me, "Mum says it's like the song Thriller." It's like, no, it is a thriller. Then I realized, not only am I not explaining to her what the film is about, but now I'm explaining to her what a thriller genre film is, and the difference between that and Michael Jackson's Thriller, and why I couldn't tell her what that was about, let alone what The Shining was about right at that moment. And while I was realizing this in my own head, my wife opened the linen closet in the hallway just behind me, and it has these plastic kind of squeaky mechanism. And she opened it, and it just went, and I jumped. I think I scared my daughter. I jumped back. I couldn't believe it.
Brilliant.
I was so just jumpy.
In the right frame of mind for a scare, and then it happens. That's marvelous.
I was so jumpy in this film, and, you know, I'd seen it many, many years ago. I think I'd seen it in the late 90s, early 2000s. I've only seen it a few times, but it's made its mark in my head. And I saw it again, watched it again a few days ago, and I had to give myself a couple of breaks. I had to stand up every now and then, and I'll just go check my computer. It was late in the evening. Everyone was already in bed, and, you know, it was cold in my house for some reason. It was cold. I had a nice blanket on me, but it was cold, and I was getting pretty freaked watching this. What were your surroundings like when you watched this for the first time?
My surroundings were quite appropriate for the first watch of this film for me, because for regular viewers, if this isn't your first time here, I have recently just moved house. So I'm in a brand new environment, and I've just gone from sort of a really small apartment, like a studio one bedroom apartment, into like a four bedroom house. And I was home by myself.
Oh, wow.
And I put it on, and then very quickly realized, like, I kind of knew what the film was about, sort of, because, you know, it's just within the public consciousness. Like, it is a classic for a reason. Like, it's been in The Simpsons and just everywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah, it got like to the moment where like the isolation madness started kicking in for Jack. And I'm like, I'm in a house all by myself, and it's huge. And I got a little bit scared, but that was perfect. Like, it's awesome. Exactly what I needed. And so I didn't have any breaks. I sort of powered through it. I've watched it twice this week. Once very recently, in fact, just turned it off then and hit record essentially, but was making dinner and stuff throughout it. So I was sort of in and out. But yeah, no, my first experience was an interesting one with all of those factors as well. Because there's always new noises and things in a house too.
I was going to say exactly that.
That you don't expect. And like, what is that? And there's a curtain right behind me as well, and it was a bit warm, so the window was open, and so occasionally like a wind, bit of a breeze had come through, and my bathroom door doesn't latch. The latch is broken, and at one point a gust of wind came through the house and like pushed the door open, and like if I'm looking at my TV, my bathroom door is through a hallway just there, so I can see it as well. So I just watched it silently open, and it gave me a little bit of a fright.
Your bathroom door doesn't have the numerals 2, 3, and 7 on it, does it?
Thank goodness, no.
You don't live in number 237, do you?
I have two of those three numbers in the number of my new house.
Oh, crap. Wow. Yep. Look, there are so many facts that you can read into online about this film, you know, not just because every film has facts about it, but this one is so well documented. There's so much rubbish out there as well, but yes. There are so many theories about what went on, and we will talk about some theories soon, but one of the facts, I think, was that the actual hotel that this was filmed in, or at least the exterior, was the Timberline Lodge. And if you know that this is something else, if it's not called Timberline Lodge, let us know. I've looked and I've seen a couple of names, but I'm going to go with Timberline Lodge. Maybe there was a name change along the way, but apparently the book references room 217, but the lodge requested that it be changed because room 217 wouldn't have been a good look for the lodge, and they didn't want to use the real room. They were, I guess, a bit skeptical or superstitious about it, so they made up room 237 because the lodge actually doesn't have room 237 in it. Right. And funnily enough, room 217 is the most requested room in that lodge.
I'm not surprised in the slightest. Yeah. I think the reason why it's 217 in the novel was because obviously the film is based, if you weren't aware, by a novel from Stephen King. And when Stephen King wrote the novel, he was on holiday with his family and they were staying in room 217, which is why he him being him and the way his mind works, that just seemed appropriate. Sure, whatever. I'm not here to comment on that.
Wow. But his family is still alive, right? I don't know if they're not. That could be a horrible Stephen thing King. To suggest. He's not in jail for anything.
I don't know.
Like, killing his family.
No.
Okay, good.
I don't know too much about him.
I do like some films that have been adapted from his books. But anyway, that's another story. This is obviously one of them. So yeah, that was an interesting little read that I saw. I thought that was pretty cool. There are people that are talking about this being like Kubrick's message to people about the moon landing and unbelievable stuff. Yeah, so, you know,
that's all rubbish.
Exactly. There's a lot of grain of salt stuff, but we've said it both already. We'll talk about that later. So let's talk about that later. But tell me, the film, in terms of how it made you feel, in terms of cinematic qualities, what are your thoughts on some of these?
Yeah, well, obviously having only just seen it for the first time this week, there's a lot of thoughts, and there were so many images throughout the film that were just so striking and that I have seen before, because the film has obviously been parodied to death at this point.
Yeah, they become iconic.
There must have been so many things in this film that I don't know whether it was the first time they'd been done or not. But yeah, like there was one thing that really stood out to me just from a filmmaking perspective. The first time I watched it, I was sitting there and it was about, I don't know, 20 minutes to half an hour in, and I was like, geez, Kubrick really likes that dissolve transition, doesn't he?
Oh, really?
Did you notice that?
No.
Every single transition in the film going from one area to another is a dissolve transition.
Wow. It's even hilarious. Later on? Like through the whole film?
Every time. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
I'm sorry if I've ruined that for people now, like going back and watching the film yearly on a date that we will give you at the end of the episode. Time codes in the description below. Like every single transition in the film from one location to another is done with a dissolve. It's Isn't hilarious. That
interesting? Because dissolves usually, for me anyway, and I think, you know, I think that's the intention, is to create a... what's it called? A movement in time. Time and or location. So for him to do that all the way through, I guess there's a big theme in terms of keeping the audience aware of the timing of when all of this happens. You know, he flashes up the days of the week.
Or amazing.
Even the time as it gets closer to the finale. But, you know, that is weird, because he's... Maybe it's a tool in terms of being able to make it feel like there's a lot of time passing, when really, you know, when it comes down to it, there isn't. So going into the psychological aspect of this as well, where it's just playing with your head.
I hadn't thought of that. Like that's a really good point. If like because of the way that time is used in the film, because it's all super ambiguous. I mean, the character of Danny kind of sees past, present, and future all at once, depending on, you know, where his mind is at.
Yes.
And then, of course, the ending happens where Jack, like, we see the photo of him in was it 1927 or 1921? 21, yeah.
Just July 4th. I know it was, like, the Independence Day.
Yep. Time is a thing that's in there. So, yeah, maybe the dissolves were used as a kind of way to muddy the waters of, like, you never really know what time frame it's kind of set in.
I don't know, but it was a good observation. I definitely didn't pick that up, and I definitely
it's everywhere.
I usually see those things.
Yeah, when it gets towards the end, and there's like, you know, and like sort of the attack is happening where Jack is, you know, hunting his family essentially. Like there are some more traditional cuts, but yeah, for the most part, the entire film is just full of these dissolve transitions. And yeah, once you see it, you can't unsee it. So again, apologies to anyone about that. But just the imagery itself in this film, everything from the blood in the elevator to the twins holding hands to Jack's face coming through the bathroom door, like it's all... And I think I've just done all of our What About Whens, so thank you. Thank you for that. But there's just so many iconic images in this film. And I think, you know, it takes a filmmaker of Kubrick's mind and talent to be able to do that. I'm still not entirely convinced about the casting of Jack Nicholson.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm really glad you mentioned that.
As incredible as he is, I have some thoughts onto that casting.
Well, why don't we talk about him and Jack, his character. Well, there's only like three characters here. Let's give him a bit of airtime and chat about each one.
Should have said at the beginning as well, sorry, The Shining, directed by Stanley Kubrick, starring Jack Nicholson, Shirley Duvall, Danny Lloyd, and Scatman Crothers, which is like the coolest name to just say.
That's pretty cool. He was a musician and pretty prolific actor and voice actor in his time as well. He did a Transformers voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know which Transformer, sorry. But he was in the Transformers movie, the animated film. The animated movie in like 86, which I believe is also the year he passed away.
The year he died, yeah.
I can't remember which. I think he was not Bumblebee, but one of the other kind of side Transformers. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. But okay, so Jack, now you mentioned this, that you're not sure of his casting. So here's one of the things that I read, and it gave me a little bit of justification in the way I was feeling as well. Tell me why you... Yeah, sorry to do that, but now I want to hear you first.
No, you said something you read, and now I'm like, I'm super engaged. Tell me. I think... Like, Jack Nicholson was such a prolific actor at the time. Like, he was a household name. Like, he was huge. Oscar winner. And I think, as good as he is, I love him as an actor. He is just phenomenal. And this is our second Jack Nicholson film to appear on the calendar. We did The Departed quite early on. And, like, he, as good as he is and as crazy as he can be, I would have preferred to have seen more of a kind of an everyman in this role. Like, just someone who like, I can see myself in a little bit more. Just someone to empathize a little bit more, because it's kind of hard to do that with Jack Nicholson because he's just so big. So having someone, I think, maybe of a little bit more grounded and everyman-esque. I don't know who you'd get at that point in time, but yeah, just someone like that. And then when the turn happens, because...
Then you know he's turned.
You expect Jack to go crazy and wild. Like,
yeah.
If it's someone that you either don't know or someone that's not known for that, because Jack Nicholson had done One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest already. Mm-hmm. So people had seen him be like this before.
That was actually his previous film.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that actually is exactly, you're touching on exactly the same point that I believe I feel and what I read. So it was really hard to see him as the straight Jack Torrance, because all through the film, right at the beginning, even when he went for the interview, I thought, oh, look at him, he's a loony character.
Yeah, he's crazy.
he's not meant to be. He's meant to be just a normal guy, you know, just his normal smile. Because of what we know of all of his acting career, he has this lunacy about him, and it was really hard to see him actually turn. And like you said, he wasn't the everyman. He was already crazy. It was really hard to see.
It's the Tom Hanks in Groundhog Day thing all over again, where he was saying there was no way I could have done it, because the whole time everyone would have been like, oh, he's going to become a good guy at the end. But with Bill Murray, you never really know which way he's going to go. So it's perfect casting. And I think if you'd have got someone a little bit more everyman who could play the straight a little bit better. Oh, not better. Better's the wrong word to use, but like, you know what I mean, right?
No, he could throw a bit of, not versatility either, but he could really get the audience to believe that he wasn't crazy at the beginning, because I didn't believe that he wasn't crazy. I actually thought, watching this another time around, you know, 20 years later than I did last, I actually thought he was already psychotic when he wasn't meant to be in the film.
Yeah, you kind of need someone just super ordinary.
Yeah.
As much as that might seem like an insult to certain actors, like that is the, like that would be needed in this film and would make the performance better.
And that's actually apparently what Stephen King wrote or said about the film. He actually wasn't the biggest fan of this film
for
a while. And one of those reasons was the casting of Jack. He was really worried about it because his last film was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And he thought the whole world knows him as this character. And they're going to see him as that character immediately when he has to be Mr. Yeah. Everyday Joe. So
what the good thing about Jack Nicholson being cast is when he does get to the point where he's chasing his family through the hallways of the hotel with an axe,
he's horrified.
You believe that he's trying to kill his family because he is crazy.
He has one of the most horrifying faces in Hollywood, apart from the guy that plays It. What's the clown's name in It? Whatever that.
Oh, in the recent remakes or the other ones?
No, the recent remake.
Skarsgård.
Yeah,
it's one of the Skarsgård guys.
A great family too. I love that Skarsgård family. Amazing. They're in everything. Everything they're in is so cool.
Yep.
But who is it? Tim, the original Pennywise. Tim Curry. Oh, yeah. He can play evil really well too.
He's amazing.
But So Tim Curry, Skarsgård. I can't remember his first name.
Is he the Bill or Alexander or?
It's not Alexander.
It's one of them.
But him and Jack Nicholson put them all up there in terms of being able to pull on an amazing crazy face.
Yeah, but no, this is great. Speaking of the cast, while we're here, I'd love to talk about Danny Lloyd. For a second, plays Danny. It's really nice to have a couple of actors play characters with the same name. It makes it sort of way less confusing.
Yeah.
Or more confusing, depending on, you know, who you are.
It's easy on set, I guess.
I appreciate it. Yeah, Danny.
Especially if it's kids.
From the little research that I did, because I didn't want to go too much, I kind of did the same as you. I started Googling some things and looking up on the Wikipedia and the IMDb page for the film. But just a lot of it was just so muddled and full of these theories of the film. And I started reading a couple and I was like, this is garbage. I have no idea if the filmmaker intended to make it like this, but just take it for what it is and enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah,
but no, I did read that Stanley Kubrick was super protective of Danny during the filmmaking of this movie, where he did not let him know that he was in a horror film. Mm-hmm. He just thought he was making a drama, to the point where during the scenes where Shelley Duvall was carrying Danny and screaming and being chased, she was just carrying a mannequin. Like, that wasn't even Danny in those scenes. She's just carrying a mannequin just to protect him there. So he was very, very protective of the kid, which is lovely. Wow. That's really good.
He was only 5 during the filming of this.
And really?
As a parent, if I had the opportunity to have my child in a film and I knew it was a horror, I would, one, either be rethinking the offer and I might actually turn it down, or two, I would really want to know what is being done to protect my child from that. So that's amazing. That's really nice to know.
That's good. Very, very protected. And also, like, what a performance out of this kid. I mean, I've spoken about it last week during Jurassic Park. Kids can be very hit or miss with me in cinema. You need to have a really good actor as a child in a film. And man, Danny Lloyd is just awesome in this movie. I don't know whether that's just pure natural talent or whether that's the direction by Kubrick or just an amalgamation of the two, because things don't, you know. Oh, I've got dogs barking. Hang on.
Are they your dogs?
No. I don't know where those dog barks are coming from.
New house, new noises. I'm guessing they're outside.
For a second,
outside.
I thought it was yours. And then I'm like, you don't have a dog.
No. I actually, that the way I can hear that is like a kind of a squeaky bark. It nearly sounded like the doorway. The door opening again.
It's your door again.
And it's late here and I'm thinking, my wife is asleep. That better not be the door. The linen closet. Who is in the linen closet? Oh, I'm not going to be able to go to sleep tonight.
No, you'll be fine.
But yeah, okay.
Danny is such an incredibly talented young actor. Just the way that he sort of stops and thinks. I'm especially thinking of the scene that he has with Scatman Crothers, where he's learning about The Shining for the first time, this ability that he has that doesn't know what it is, other than that he speaks to this little boy inside of his mouth, Tony, which I'm going to talk about Tony in a little bit as well, because I've got some research that I've done as well as some theories and things on that too.
Okay.
And who Tony is, because it's never answered in the film. But yeah, his ability to just listen and react is kind of veteran class for a kid so young. It's awesome to see. What a performance.
It's kind of a blank stare. I saw this blank stare in him quite a few times that I actually thought at the beginning, I thought nearly the opposite. I thought, oh, this kid, they've just told him to like look just past his head. And pretend when his head goes there that you're still looking at it in the distance. I thought that's what it was, because a few of the other scenes, he has this vacant expression on his face. So I didn't know how to take that, but I just saw this as through the film, he became more and more, I don't know, embroiled in what was going on psychologically. Like the fact that he has this shining doesn't mean he just saw something happening and now he's wrapped up in what his dad is going through and he's running for his life. There's something deeper going on here.
Very much so.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so he was a creepy kid. Great actor. Yeah. Who Amazing. I also did read a little bit about him that I think he saw the film when he was 16 for the first time.
Yes. Yeah, the full cut.
Which also just sets me aside. I guess maybe his parents were like, no, you can't watch it. Wait till you're 16. I don't know. If I was a kid in a movie, I would want to watch that thing as soon as I could. I don't know. I'd be telling all my friends at kindy.
Hey, check out this movie that I'm in, friends.
Yeah. There was a cool maze running scene.
Yeah. Stanley Kubrick is going to pay for all of your therapy.
Yeah. Okay, so Danny. So there was... All right, so Jack, we spoke about Jack Nicholson. Yeah. Haven't spoken about the character. Because his character, poor Jack Torrance, just gets totally... Yeah. He gets what's the word? By demons?
Possessed.
He gets possessed.
Yeah, true.
That's what I mean.
I think that his possession... I think they can only kind of... The hotel can only kind of take over someone like that when there's already something in them that they can latch onto. Like, they weren't able to do it with his wife, with Wendy.
Yeah. Yeah, true. True. So, who knows? Too many things.
So, either she's strong or the poltergeist in the hotel is sexist. So, I don't know which one it is. Comment below and let us know.
This also leads into one of the other theories. One that I actually like, the only one that I like, which I don't know if it's true or not. But what about Wendy? Okay, Shelley Duvall.
Oh, so good. She's wonderful. Just like scream queen. Strongest character in the film by far. Like, scream does not let... Queen. Yeah, that's a very common term.
Oh, good.
In the horror genre.
I'm becoming educated.
Yeah. She's so strong and loving. She's a nice foil for Jack. As scared as she is, she just wants to do the best for Danny, for her son, which obviously makes sense. That should be a thing that all parents should be able to empathize with. Not Jack Torrance, apparently. He just cares about himself because he's an egotistical maniac.
Yeah. And he apparently, I think reading into some of the things that they go through in the film, he has hurt Danny in the past. He broke his arm or something.
Dislocated his shoulder.
Holy moly. Through anger. You know, so he's got anger issues already.
Yeah, which, that was a really nice piece of foreshadowing. Actually, you know what? To be fair, I'm going to bring my doctor friend back into this. That's actually super easy to do to a kid of what Danny's age would have been, like that three-year-old mark. Their joints are just essentially made of nothing. Mm-hmm. And if you yank them the wrong way, it'll come.
Yeah, I think before a child is five, their joints haven't solidified, whatever. I don't know. I have a friend who used to do weights and he picked his daughter up by the arms and lifted her up, and just the gentle lifting, not even jerking her up.
Body weight.
Dislocated one of her shoulders. She was about three. Yeah.
Yeah. Not justifying Jack's actions in the film because by the way, even he tells it when he's trying to justify it, he seemed like he did it in quite a violent manner.
So, and he was trying to justify it by saying, you know, accidentally, and he was really hamming up the, I didn't mean it, but in any case, you were probably just a couple of square inches
of pressure and pop out it came and stop justifying it. And
he does have anger management issues. He's not the nicest of fathers, and the character of Wendy is so nurturing and so trying to understand and do everything for her husband. And, you know, it must be really hard for her because little Danny's worried that he's not going to have any friends. And she's like, what can she say to that? She's like, you're going to have a great time. So I think she realizes she has to be the one for Danny. And you see them playing all the time, which was really sweet, running in the snow and chasing each other. It was just really sad when Danny's playing on the carpet in the awesome geometric shaped carpets that are used in the set design.
And so he's good.
Lining up his cars, and then the tennis ball comes rolling in, and he thinks it's his mum. I'm like, oh, you poor child, you poor child. Don't fall for it, it's the spirits. And he looks up and no one's there.
Apparently that was supposed to come back in an alternate ending of the film. I just literally just read before we sat down that was supposed to...
the tennis ball?
Yeah, it was supposed to end where they escape and they're in hospital and the police come over and they're like, we never found Jack. And the hotel manager, Ullman, who he has the interview with at the beginning,
yeah,
comes up to the kid and gives him the tennis ball and then leaves laughing. And Terrence's jaw has just dropped. I'm kind of glad they didn't do this because it just sounds horrific.
Oh, a little.
Yeah. No, little no shivers. One behind you, you're fine. I'm good. I got a bookcase behind me. There's nothing here that can get me.
Man, things like that.
Sorry about that. But just before we move away from the carpet real quick, there is a really cool thing that I love of another film that uses this carpet. It's an animated film. Do you know this?
Yes. Yes. It is a Disney affiliation.
It is Disney.
Is it Pixar?
It's Pixar, yeah.
I don't know the film, though. But I have this for some reason. It's one of those things. It's in memory.
I'm sure that
bank.
There's someone who always contributes to What About When, and send us an email.
Chris Animations.
He
probably would know.
He'll probably know this one, and he'll be screaming down his listening device of choice at the moment, going, "Terrence, is it this? You idiot!" without any further ado, Toy Story in Pixar's first foray into the feature film. In Toy Story, in Sid's bedroom, the next door neighbor, or in just Sid's house, I think, his carpet is the same carpet from the Overlook Hotel. So there's something for the film nerds out there, if you didn't know that one. That's super fun.
And the reason I know that, I had an inkling it was a Pixar or Disney, is I've read a long time ago, one of the directors of a couple of the Pixar films likes to drop Shining Easter eggs. Through some of the films. So I think in some other Pixar films, there are a few little homages to The Shining as well.
Yeah, like in a lot of people miss it, but in Monsters, Inc., there's a scene where Mike Wazowski's coming around a corner and like these elevator doors open and just tons of blood just flies out and starts washing all the monsters out of the monster floor. A lot of people don't catch it, but it's in there. Have another look.
You know how I know you're lying? Because it's called the scare floor.
Oh, he saw through it.
You nearly had me. You nearly had me on that one.
Almost got you.
You did. Wait? Wazowski? No.
Yeah.
How was that scene? And doing the little intercutting with Danny's screaming face?
Yep. The first time we see it is when Danny is speaking to
Tony.
To Tony. And
that's a creepy
and he's
voice.
Like, just tell me why you're scared of the hotel. And he's like, just show me. And then he sees the flashes of the twin girls and the blood in the elevator, and then his horrifying face, which is the face he pulls when Dick gets axed in the chest, sort of seeing the past and the future all at once. And Tony showing him. Now, whilst we're here, I don't think there's any better time to do it. Yeah, Tony, after I watched the film, I thought, like, about 45 minutes in, I'm like, cool, we're going to get an explanation as to who or what Tony is. Is he part of the hotel or what's happening? So I did, it was the first piece of research I did after watching the movie for the first time, and sort of half definitively found out, I know that's a contradictory thing to say, but found out who Tony is. Do you know?
No. But then...
So, Danny's full name is Danny Anthony Torrens.
Okay, so it's his middle name.
And there is, in one of the other Stephen King novels that has Danny as a character in it, when he talks about Tony, he says, it was like looking into a future mirror. I'm paraphrasing it. But the theory is that Tony is Danny from the future speaking to him.
Oh.
As not too far, like 11 years in the future, like a teenager.
Yeah.
And so he's conversing with his younger self and trying to warn him of the things that's going to happen. But he hasn't quite figured out his shining powers yet.
Wow.
Yeah. And I like that theory a lot.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Well, what about the theory?
We're going to just gonna do theories now? I love it.
Look, I only have the one, and I ended up reading this article because it was so different to any of the other ones. You know, there was one that said there was no Jack Torrance, which kind of is interesting that you brought in that alternate ending. Jack was throwing the tennis ball around at the beginning as well. And right towards the end, he throws the tennis ball down the hallway and walks off. So I thought maybe the tennis ball was used by someone else rolling it on the carpet. But it was interesting that it was a tennis ball. Anyway, the whole thing is set on an ancient Indian burial ground. Remember that?
Yeah.
That bit of 80s. How do we explain the horrific things that go on? Oh, just say the phrase Indian burial ground.
Yeah.
So that is a thing. So there's a lot of spiritual activity and a lot of negative spiritual activity that's going on at that site. And touching on what you said earlier with the fact that a possession can apparently happen easier to a body or a mind that is weaker.
Mm-hmm.
Is
good way to put it. Excellent way to put it.
Is where it's going to happen. So, in this instance, Danny has these powers, and Danny, by going to the Overlook Hotel, has kind of orchestrated this whole thing. And Danny's shining gives him the ability to have people that he doesn't like his dad, become possessed. And ultimately, he planned the demise of his own father, who he ultimately killed.
Interesting.
By being able to bring him to this area where he was able to open up the doorway to this spiritual realm that had the power to take control of him. And the reason that his mother didn't get affected at all was because he kind of made an oath with his dad. He hypnotized or controlled him in that scene where they were hugging. And they had that weird moment. This is where he was kind of straight arms, just in an embrace from his dad. And he says, you wouldn't hurt me or mum, would you? And he says, no, I'll never hurt you. Never, as long as I live. I could never do anything like that. So that was kind of, he's telling him, all right, don't hurt her. Because he could. She's frail. She's not very athletic. You know, she's swinging at him with a baseball bat, but she holds it in the middle of the bat. You know, little things like that. She's
also terrified.
Okay, fair enough. She's terrified. And she already got a swing in and hit him. But, you know, that was a really interesting concept. A really interesting concept that his... Yeah,
that's an interesting one. I'll have to think on that a bit more.
Tony character was actually the ability that he got to do that. And Halloran saw it in him. And he saw that Dick Halloran was a threat and contacted him, which is what made him fly. And it also explains why Halloran didn't bring any backup or didn't bring anyone with him. If he knew horrific things were happening there, why would you not bring the police or suggest that, you know, hey, can you come up with me? So it's a very, I don't know, I just got totally taken in by this theory. And I thought it was just a wonderful way to explain the whole thing.
Interesting. Yeah. So I have a theory which I kind of thought after seeing Dr. Sleep today.
It's all right. It's all right.
Talk about that too much. I will say that Dr. Sleep is an absolute recommendation for you to check out if you enjoy The Shining and you like this world and you want more of it. It is a great follow-up to it, in my opinion. It's nothing like the first film. nothing like it. It is a completely different story, but it does follow Danny as the main character.
All right, cool.
As an adult, and yeah, so definitely would check it out. Very, very interesting. But no, I have this idea that the Overlook Hotel itself, because it is such a spiritual force in the movie, and it's alive. To me, the hotel is alive. It is a living, breathing thing. And I think that its objective is to kill people who can kill it, who it's threatened by, so people who shine. And so it lures them there and tries to kill them on their own ground. So that's my theory as to what happened. Ooh. I think that's why the cook has been there for so long. But it's only active during certain times of the year as well, for reasons that I don't know about. But yeah, I think that who was the caretaker before Jack?
Yeah.
The one who killed his family in the 70s?
The guy that meets him in the toilet.
Yeah. So I think that his daughters had the ability to shine, which is how they show up as poltergeists.
Ooh.
At being dead. I think that they're really there.
Yeah.
The woman in the bathtub, I think, was also a shine person who the hotel killed and is keeping trapped there.
Do you think that was his wife, though? Because the way the story told
it... No, I don't think it was. I think it was someone else. I don't think it was his wife. I think it was just another woman who had the ability to shine.
Okay.
I think his two twin girls had this ability, and the hotel lured them there and got the father possessed to kill them, and then put a shotgun in his mouth. And so I think the same thing happened with Jack and his family. He was lured there by the hotel because he's weak of mind. And Danny, he was there purely to kill Danny, to get rid of this kid who shines. Oh. Because it's only the shining people who have the ability to destroy the hotel.
Oh my God. How do you mean destroy it? Like clean it of its spiritual...
Cleanse it of its impurities.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Of its demon possession.
And those twins were trying to get him, come play with us forever and ever.
I think those twins tried to... because he mentions that the twins stole matches and tried to burn the hotel down.
Oh.
I think they were trying to kill whatever was in the hotel.
Wow.
And the hotel fought back.
Oh, okay. This is heavy.
Yeah, wow. That's what I think. I don't think that it's an accident that line was in there about them stealing matches and trying to burn the hotel down. I think they were trying to kill it.
Cool.
And the original novel ends with the Overlook Hotel being burned down by Danny.
Yeah, okay. All right. I like that. I like that theory also. I like that theory. A couple of really good cliffhangers that they left in here.
So many.
The photo.
Yep. I've no idea what is happening with the photo. None. It is literally the question that I have is what the hell happened at the end with the photo.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you asked, because I actually did find, not that I was looking, but it was one of the things that came up. A quote from Kubrick in an interview that he was in when he was asked about the photo, and he said, "The ballroom photograph at the very end suggests the reincarnation of Jack."
Okay, so it's the more literal thing then. That's what I had in my head, but I thought it was probably something a little bit more clever than that, because I was able to think of it.
Well, you're pretty cleverly. You're pretty clever. Well,
apparently.
But this hotel just keeps consuming soul after soul after soul, I guess. It is it is winning.
I did find out that photo is actually a photograph from the time period back then.
Cool.
And they just took Jack Nicholson's head and kind of, not Photoshop, because Photoshop wasn't a thing, but like airbrushed it on top of whoever that was. Because they tried to, they were going to get a bunch of extras and do the photo, but Kubrick was like, we'll never be able to recreate it as well as what an actual photograph looks like from that time period. So they just found a photo and used that instead.
Oh, such a purist, isn't he?
Yeah, such right.
A method little director.
A little bit wanky.
The, you know, one, I don't know if this is totally out of place, but in terms of Kubrick's directing, one thing I really love, and I've seen in another director that I really love, is his one-point perspective on things in terms of the shot decisions that he makes. That, you know, these, it's what makes these scenes become iconic. The hallway scenes, the blood scene, that's all one-point perspective. The twins in the hallways, any hallway shot, any shot that lends itself to having symmetry, he will whack the camera dead bang in the middle and, you know, square it off so that it's parallel to the wall.
Or that the lens is parallel to the wall. It's kind of like a spooky Wes Anderson.
Well, see, Wes Anderson is actually the director that I'm talking about. I love Wes Anderson films, and there is at least one that we're going to put on the calendar. And I know you haven't seen it yet, Lee, but it is going on there. Yep. And I like to think that he uses inspiration from Kubrick. I mean, Kubrick's not the only director that does this, I'm sure, but it's a really neat way to create, I don't know, to create tension or space or mystery, because it's a shot that's not angled at the person. It's not directed and framed with rule of thirds or whatever rule you want.
It's kind of unnatural.
It's quite unnatural, and it's more about the architecture and the environment that you're in. So, you know, he does this brilliantly. Kubrick, both of them do, but the way Kubrick does it in this, you just get such a sense of the fact that the Overlook Hotel actually is another character in this, because he puts so much emphasis on shooting this hotel in such a beautiful way, in such an overbearing, ominous way as well. It's such a grandiose figure. You know, the maze, I mean, I wonder if that maze exists in real life. Yeah,
I don't know how they did the shot of when Jack was looking down over the model maze and having Wendy and Danny walk through, and it was clearly like a model with these people. I don't know how they did that shot back when this film was made. It was very, very cleverly done.
Well, they did use helicopters.
No, but like the maze, it looked like the maze that they were walking through with the helicopter, like with that shot. It looked like it was made out of like cardboard. It looked like
the model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it didn't look like real hedges.
I think they chose their time of day really well.
Just right.
To get the sun low, to get the shadows really sharp. And so that the shadows, because the sun would have had to have been quite high to make the shadows fall on the path inside of the maze. Yep. I think that's all they did, and it was just really clever framing and clever editing to make
it was a great shot.
Make it match. It was a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
And you know that the helicopter, I really do love that at the beginning of this film, you get to see the helicopter shadow on the cliff. And as I was rugged up getting prepped to watch this film, I was able with that visual to go, oh, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's just a movie. And when things got a bit tricky, I kept remembering, it's just a movie. Remember, there was a helicopter they used. We saw the helicopter. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, there's people making this. It's all good.
Yeah. Behind me is the whole crew. The crew is behind me. Someone's eating a bag of chips. It's fine. It's fine.
All right. We might... if you... Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to add before we jump into What About When's? I do want to give a quick shout out to the score in this film. Yeah. The score and is sound. Great. And like opening up like with that amazing piece of music right off the bat. Like when this movie started, when I watched it this week, I was like, oh, this is what... that sound is from.
Yeah, you're right. The score was just really horrifying. The sound design, or you know, and we've spoken about this with other films that have very little dialogue and little music playing. They really emphasize on the sound. The sound of the trike as Danny rides through the hallways and in the different rooms, you know, it goes from the hardwood floors to the carpet, the hardwood, the carpet. Whenever I see or feel like there's a tricycle in my house, if I see someone riding it, which I don't anymore, but I used to, honestly, if I saw my kid riding down the hallway on a tricycle, which I did a few times, I freaked out. And I hadn't seen the film for years.
The sound of those wheels going from like the hardwood floors to the rugs, just going it was like a drum roll almost, like a
brrrr. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it just, and which was tension. So effective because I hadn't seen the movie, I knew the shot of the tricycle coming around the corner and the twins and holding the twins. Hands at the end of the hallway. Like, I knew that that was a thing. And so, and it doesn't happen for a little while.
No, that's right. A few
times that he's riding the trike.
So and you're the waiting first time for he's it.
Riding the trike and you hear the brrrr, I'm like, oh God, no, this is it. It's too early. I'm not ready for this. And then it doesn't happen. And then it happens again. And then it doesn't happen. Oh man, it freaked me out. And then I was looking out for the carpet. And I'm like, oh, maybe when we see the carpet, it'll happen. But no, yeah. It was just on like a blue carpet where he goes around the corner and the girls are at the end of the thing. But yeah, that like drum roll-esque like sound of the plastic wheels over the hardwood floors, incredibly effective.
He does jump scares pretty well. There are a couple of very unassuming jump scares, but you know, the screams, the blood, the twins there, and all of a sudden they flash to their bloody bodies on the floor and then flash back. Like, it was great. And then the titles.
Oh, yeah. I told Terrence during the week after I saw the film that the first genuine scare that I got in the movie, aside from just an overarching sense of impending doom, was when I was going to make it my first What About When. Would you like to go into What About When's?
You know what? Let's do What About When's.
We're almost at an hour. It's probably going to be a good idea to do get
What
in.
About When's right now. There's so much we didn't talk about.
If we haven't talked about your favorite part, comment below on YouTube is the best way to do it. Yeah. Hit us up on Twitter or Instagram. We're at The Movie Cal. Get that one done. Let us know any theories that you've got or you've read. There's a bunch that are out there, as Terrence mentioned, in the 40-year history of this movie. Lots and lots of things have been written and posed for the film.
I might find the link to the one that I mentioned. It's a really long read. I might give you a link and we can put that in the description too. Maybe we'll see.
We'll see. Or we'll add it as a comment on YouTube,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, so episode 18, The Shining, What About When? Hashtag What About When. We are on Instagram and Twitter at TheMovieCal. Our email address is themoviecal@gmail.com. Links to all of these in the description below, as well as on our website, themoviecalendar.com.
Yes. Well, we have one this week.
We have Instagram. A couple from Instagram, but let's just for the people who are listening to the whole episode through, I'll quickly do the one that I had, and it was the first like proper scare that I had after the sort of the impending doom that you felt throughout the film. But yeah, the first like genuine moment of, oh my God, I wasn't ready for that, was when Wendy and Danny are going through the maze for the first time, where she's sort of chasing him, and it's this really beautiful moment of, you know, them kind of having a good time, and then you see sort of Jack looking over the miniature of it and seeing them, and with that horrible look on his face, and then they're just walking and it just pops up on the screen like black with the white writing, just Tuesday, with a screech sound. And I don't know why, because there'd been black screen with text in the movie already, but it just scared the daylights out of me. I wasn't ready for it.
Tuesday. You know, they did that again, and the one that got me, because I got done by one, was when just after Danny actually rides and sees the twins, and he settles himself by talking to Tony and saying, Tony, I'm scared, and Tony says, it's all right, just like Halloran says, they're just like pictures in a book, they're not really there. And then boom, Monday. Okay, well, that's a good What About When. He uses titles very nicely in this film. All right.
Yeah, really well done.
All right, so I've got a couple as well, and we've got a What About When from Instagram. I'll do the Insta one now. It is from our friend who has submitted before. This is from Tobias J. Ruse.
Hi, Tobias, thank you. He's
actually written quite a lot. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I think I might go to the first and maybe the last paragraph here. So
you can see it. You can see it on our Instagram if you would like to read the whole thing.
Jump on Insta; it's there. I won't physically put it on the screen either, the whole thing. But I'll read a bit. It says, "Hey guys, The Shining is one of my favorite." That's us. We're the guys. The Shining is one of my favorite Jack Nicholson films. There are simply too many great moments for me to mention in this film for the hashtag what about when section, but one stands out. The one that I want to submit is when Jack is trying to work on his novel and keeps getting interrupted by his family. Then he talks about that. So this is actually what we were mentioning earlier, where he's so crazy and he finally lashes out, and that's where we see Jack is Jack, right? But Tobias then he talks about that a little bit, and how it's a shocking reveal that Wendy discovers that instead of writing his novel, he's written these lines of "all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy." And what made this so much more creepy was the spelling and typo errors made by Jack. It demonstrated so well how he was slowly losing his mind and being possessed.
Yeah. Or at least the person who was working on set who had to type them up was absolutely losing their mind for having Kubrick make them type so many of just the same sentence over
so
and
Stanley
over
again, got
hundreds of pages.
So was that? Do you reckon that was like a PA, some production assistant? Just
I don't know whether it was a producer or something, but yeah, he made someone on set as well do the typing for those moments. So any time that you hear the typewriter clacking away on like a big wide shot where it shows Jack, there is someone off screen with a typewriter who is typing the words "all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy," because Kubrick heard that the keys all make different sounds, and he wanted it to be authentic to any people listening in the audience who knew that the different clicks and clacks of a typewriter, that it was done for real.
Wow, that's like mechanical typewriter lip reading. Oh yeah, I know exactly what those the tone dial phones. I know the numbers from beep boop boop. Okay, yep.
But the whole like the first time that Wendy kind of interrupts him, and he just like very overdramatically reacts to her, where he screams and "don't you effing come in here, whether you hear clacking or you don't, like this is my workspace," and it's like, "well, dude, calm down. I understand that the hotel is kind of affecting you at the moment, chill. But there's no need for that. If I was Wendy in that situation, you'd just leave, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I don't how dare you talk to me like this, you absolute asshole of a man.
Or at least walk out of the room. Like, okay, you're kind of trapped there. That's the same scene where Danny comes in with the marks on his neck?
No, that's
later on.
That's when Jack, so Jack is having like his night terrors. He has the nightmare where he's screaming on the desk. Incredible scene.
Yeah.
That's a really good "what about when" moment, is when she's just doing some work, playing around in the boiler room, flicking switches, and then you just start hearing Jack scream. And you go off and see him, and he's having a terror, and "I had a dream that I murdered you and Danny and with an axe." And yeah, so this is the hotel kind of putting it in his mind.
Yeah.
More and more, just dropping these little bits.
Danny putting it in his mind.
Terrence has the theory that it's Danny that's actually led them all there so that he can kill his father.
Yep, because he was viewed by his father.
Sold. And sold on it.
Easy. Even the drive at the beginning, the dad is like, "shut up, kid. Can't believe you're on the ride here to this trip where I'm going to write my novel." He doesn't seem like a loving dad. Okay. Do you have another "what about when"?
I do. I've got two, and they're kind of the big ones.
Do one of them, and then I'll do
what about when Jack goes into room 237 for the first time and sees the woman in the bathtub, and then just that whole moment is just hashtag what about when, because it's just it's horrific, and it stays with you. And like even watching it again for the second time this week, and you see Danny in the bathroom where he's talking to Tony about, "do you think you got the job?" It's like, he already did. The bathtub in the back, there's a bathtub in the background of that shot with the shower curtain, and I was just half expecting to see a hand just like reach around and grab the curtain and pull it back. Yeah.
Isn't it creepy when he walks into the room and you see the bathroom again in this 1-point perspective, and the shower curtain is pulled nearly exactly halfway, and you see this the flesh tone, you know someone's behind there.
Yeah. because there's like, you walk into the room and you're like, okay, scary, there's a room but you can't see it, but then there's a door and the door is slightly ajar and you're like, oh god, I don't want to know what's behind that door, and we slowly go towards it and the door opens and you're waiting for something and there's not, there's another screen, there's the shower curtain screen, you're like, oh my god, just let this end already, I can't deal with this anymore, just show me what it is.
That was just freaky. I like that he got scared in that scene.
Good. Yep.
I didn't like that he didn't tell Wendy about it. That was weird.
That whole thing was weird. I think that was reasons. The hotel influence as well.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a couple of what about when. So, what about when any time Danny talks to Tony?
Yeah.
Just the creepiest. For quite a bit terrifying. In the film, I thought it was someone else's voice till I realized it's just his croaky voice.
Yeah.
That again, amazing acting by this little kid, this little five-year-old to
yeah, just also, compose. You may have come across it or not, or people who have done any research on the movie, it's literally one of the first things that pops up. The whole moving the finger thing to talk to Tony, that wasn't in the script or directed. That was Danny Lloyd, kid, like came up with that.
Wow.
Super effective way to do it. And just adds another little extra layer of creepiness to it as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was an acting decision.
Wow. By that kid. Well done, Danny Lloyd. I have another what about when, but I want to hear yours next.
Well, I've got what about when Jack goes to the ballroom for the first time and sits down at the bar and kind of looks around and then it has just the shot of his face like directly in front and he's looking pretty much straight at the camera with his hands over his face and then looks down and he's, "Hey, Lloyd, quiet night, is it?"
There he is. Yeah. There's our Jack. So
anytime he's conversing with... It's the hotel. He's conversing with the hotel, essentially, and they're just trying to plant into his mind these little subconscious, like, hey, kill your family. That'd be a great idea. You should do that.
The bathroom when he's talking to the old caretaker. And he says, you've been the caretaker the whole time.
The whole time, yeah.
See, that's creepy ass.
Just going into his extra bit of madness. I think it was really clever. To me, my theory is, sort of backing on the other one, is that the hotel knew that he was told this story where sort of 10 years prior, the old caretaker had murdered his family. And so the hotel was just using that as a, you should do this same thing because it's already in his mind at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just feeding on that part.
All right. Well, I have another what about when. What about when Dick Halloran comes back to the hotel and he's walking in the hotel calling out, "Is anyone here?" And you know that Jack is somewhere in that room and he comes out from behind the pillar and just axes him in the chest.
I was so sad.
Oh.
I loved that character and I thought he was coming to save the day and he's got the shine ability as well. You'd think he'd know. Whilst I don't know a way to write around it because they just needed the buggy to be there and they didn't really need him, there's got to be a better way to do that, right? To not have him die. I loved him as a character.
Well, didn't you say that he didn't die in the book?
I haven't read the novel, but apparently in the novel he survives to the end, which would have been great because it's a good performance and an excellent character. It would have been... Would have been good for him to stick around.
I just love that his snowmobile didn't get tampered with. I just love that. That was another freaky moment where Jack says, you know, go check the snowmobile. And that was a horrific moment as well, where she's holding whatever that piece of motor engine is. I'm very not mechanically minded.
No idea. Motor engine.
I think it's the same piece of motor that the nuns take out of the Gestapo's car in The Sound of Music to stop them chasing Von Trapp and his family and Maria.
Yeah, It's also the thing that Bill Murray takes out in Groundhog Day, to trap them. Yeah.
Do you reckon that's just a prop that gets passed on through Hollywood?
that would be so funny. Car,
there are like three cables sticking out of it. And everyone, no matter what mechanical expertise they have, they go, "Ah, damn it, they've got the thing out." Ah.
I would say that actual mechanics would be like, "Oh God, this trope again. It's not even a thing that's in the car."
I'm going to ask my mechanic now.
Hey, by the way, I know you're just servicing my vehicle, but have you seen The Shining?
Yeah, or The Sound of Music or Groundhog Day. There's this piece. My mechanic's good. He'll tell me. He'll show me.
Yeah, let us know. Let us know when you get your car service next.
Okay, so you got another one?
Yeah, like, and it's the one that's been probably parodied the most out of this film. And it's, yeah, hashtag, what about when Jack axes his way through the bathroom door, pops his head in and does the, "Here's Johnny."
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. That, yeah. Definitely, I've said it a few times, iconic, that on the DVD. Unbelievable. And of course, which everyone would know by now, and if you don't, well, he ad-libbed that line. The opening, that's what Johnny Carson would say when he opened
Johnny the show. Carson, that's right.
So, you know, that was just unbelievable that is the line he chose and it made it into the film. And for that scene, there are so many YouTube videos. You know, there's the one where he amps himself up just before that scene. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
He's jumping around the bedroom and he's just psyching himself up. That is scary in itself as well. You know, being one of the crew, I'd be worried about getting in his way, that he would punch me or get me fired or something. But that was unbelievable. The other thing about that scene, not specifically at the bathroom door, but at the door to the room, at the door to the apartment, he's in the hallway when he's swinging the axe. There are also a lot of little featurettes and documentaries done on Kubrick's filming style, where this was something that kind of broke the mold. He would follow...
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, follow the axe.
Movement of the axe so rapidly. And if you get a chance to see any of the behind-the-scenes footage, you see him. You see Kubrick on the camera, and he is swinging it so fast on the top of this tripod to chase the movement that just brings you into the action like had never been seen before. This was just unheard of to move it like this.
Yeah, none of this like... in the film Upgrade, which I know you haven't seen, but I've spoken to Terrence about it quite a lot. It's one of my favorite modern action films, done on the cheap too. There's a particular scene, it's in the trailer, where the main character does like a flip and the camera kind of goes with him. And the way that they did it was they literally just put like an iPhone on like a gimbal, like a
chest harness or something,
and just flipped it around flipped, and they were like, yeah, there was nothing fancy about it. There was no big rig or anything. It was just a gimbal and an iPhone, and they were just like, flip, easy as. Couldn't do that 40 years ago.
No, not with big film cameras. The other camera thing I wanted to mention in this is the guy that invented the Steadicam. I think this was the third or fourth film that he'd ever used the Steadicam on, and it came out a lot in The Shining, especially, and there are again a few photos of this, in the maze scene. You know, the Steadicam was used a lot there. They couldn't set tracks down. There was so much, they used a lot of salt in that scene to mimic snow. So it just would have rusted all the gear, but just crazy. Groundbreaking stuff for Steadicam, for camera movements in general. Kubrick style just really got cemented into our, what do we call it, our film society. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was just a beautiful film to watch. Just beautiful, stunning.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Amazing. Did you have any other what about
when? Scary as hell. No, I didn't.
That'll do it then. I'm happy with that. Let us know what your what about when's were. If you didn't get to them, if we didn't get to yours, or you didn't get to us before we recorded, leave them down below in the comments on YouTube. Would be a great place to do that. But for now, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else I want to say before we add it to the calendar. I wrote a few notes, talked about that. Going to the maze, Tuesday on the screen, terrifying for some reason.
Yeah. No, I'm good.
Yeah, his reaction when... Yeah, perfect. That's about it.
Johnny Axe. So, oh, no, I did. That axe.
I'll go.
There's a little documentary floating around that axe has been located. There are quite a number of axes used on set, and they were just everyday axes, like wood chopping axes. And some guy from the crew bought it. Like they'd sell the props at the end of the shoot. Yep. And it was sitting in his shed, his back shed, for like 30 years.
No.
And it was tracked down through this collector of movie props who would just go and find who was working on those sets and see if anyone knew what happened. And he bought it. Bought it for a few thousand dollars. And then it got sold to a mass collector who bought it for like $250,000 or something like that.
Unreal.
But that axe is in existence and it's in the hands of a collector, I think, today. So
hopefully a lot of that money went to charity. That'd be nice.
I have no idea. I think it was a sum like that, like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Usually when movie props get auctioned off, a lot of it goes to charities, which is good. I don't have the exact numbers with me. Terrence might be able to pop them on the screen if I get them wrong, but I did read that during the shooting of that scene, because Kubrick was renowned for doing just so many takes, dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of takes, for a film, that they went through, they shot that over 3 days, and they used about 60 doors. I think that's
Jack number. Would have been
if pretty. It's, yeah, if it's not the number, it flashed up on the screen when I said it.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's correct. But yeah, just incredible. I'll find
it, put it up.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he did lots of takes. All right. Well, yeah, I'm good with what about when's. Let's move into the reason we're making this kind of podcasty thing.
To the main event, the reason why we're all here. The moment you've all been waiting for. We're going to add The Shining to the movie calendar.
Mm.
So you're going to have a day of the year, every year going forward, to watch The Shining. And the date that we have chosen for you is going to be December 11th.
Why, Lee?
And the reason why we have chosen that date is because if you track the days when this movie happens, because we know that the Overlook Hotel is only open between the 15th of May and the 30th of October every year, so we know what date the caretaker took over, and also this is in the novel as well, but disregard that. December 11th is when it all happens. It's when Dick comes back to the hotel. It's when we see the 8 a.m. for the first time. It is the day that Jack attacks his family. They escape the Overlook Hotel and he dies in the snowy maze. So it's the date that all of that happens. And we thought, this being such a family-friendly film, we'd put it in the holidays of December.
Yeah. The day of the Jack attack. Excellent.
Perfect. The Jack attack.
I think school is still on in Australia anyway, December 11th. Sure. So they're not out on their holidays yet, so
yep.
Parents watch it, and then let your kids watch it.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, they'll watch it with the kids. They'll love it.
I think it's great.
But yeah, you happy with that date?
I'm happy with that date.
Awesome. Me too. Happy with that date. It's good. If you would like to contribute to the movie calendar in any way, best ways to do it are through Twitter or Instagram. You can send us an email as well. Links to all of these in the description below. Yeah, if you have any ideas of movies that you want us to talk about and dates for them to appear on the calendar, please let us know. We've got a couple lined up in the future. Oh my God, we did it again.
Our next movie.
We don't
know
what movie we're going to talk about next week. Oh, this is too funny.
So at the end of October.
We get so excited to just start recording and talking about movies that we just completely... We have like a list of films that we want to do, and we kind of just check them off week to week, and then when it gets dwindled down, we kind of add more to it. Oh, yeah. So we know that the end of the month we are going to be doing Get Out. So if you haven't seen Get Out, check that out.
You will want time to process that film before we talk about it, trust me.
Definitely go and see that one. But for next week, what do you want to do, Terrence?
Well, let's do the little conversation at this point here. If we'll do a quick blah, 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 through. All right, but we'll keep recording.
We'll have a conversation. It'll be no time for you, and we'll be right back. And we're back. We have decided on what next week's film is going to be. Terrence looks terrified right now. So yeah, we decided with the month of October, because there's a couple of horror films that we want to do. We want to do something a little bit lighter as well. So in the mix of it all, in between The Shining and whatever's going to come the week after next and then Get Out, we're going to do a very sweet film, one of my favorite rom-coms. I've got a friend of mine that I work with who is going to be absolutely blown away that we're going to be doing this film. So yeah, we're going to be doing About Time. Sorry, Rachel McAdams and Donald Gleeson. It is such a sweet, beautiful film. So give that a watch if you haven't seen it. Get all the lovely feels, and then pop on back for next week's discussion.
Okay, About Time. Another one I haven't seen yet. Am I going to cry?
I don't know. You're not much of a crier, really.
No, not really. But I will. I do.
And I've seen the movie lots.
I well up. I do a lot of these ones where I have to kind of look up and roll my eyeballs, and that usually.
Yeah. No. I violently sob when it comes to films that kind of just the way, even like when they're using tricks to the, like no work, they get me every time. So yeah, I'm a sucker for it.
All right. Well, this will be a bit of a break in the horror pace.
Yeah.
Top and Tail Horror. Top and Tail October with Horror. All right. About Time. And then the week after that is still in the air. We will announce it as time goes on, and it'll be about time to mention it.
Yes, at the end of next week, we will make sure that we have the discussion before we start recording About Time as to what next week's film will be. I don't want to promise it, but we'll see.
And we might we can release it earlier if we need to. We might forget, like you've forgotten before.
Yeah, it's all good. It's fine.
We'll be right.
Like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was fun.
We'll be right. Okay. Well, About Time. Worthy enough for you to put on the calendar, and
absolutely
worthy enough for me to trust in you that I will enjoy this film.
Yes.
If I don't, this will be an awkward next episode.
It's fine. I'll just get someone in who likes the movie.
Fine. All right. Well, that's it. Until next episode.
That's it. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. Thank you, Terrence, for going on a deep dive on The Shining with me and finally getting me to watch it, because, it has been on my... I call it my blind spot list, film that was on my blind spot list for such a long time. So I'm glad that I did it, because it is one for the ages.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week for About Time.
See you soon.